guys. Welcome to the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino. Today I have with me a very awesome guest. Some of you are very familiar with him as you suggested this company to be on our podcast. So we listened, we heard you, we reached out, and here we are doing our thing. And today I have with me Adam LaRoe. Adam will tell you all about his company and what he does. So Adam, give us the 1 to 2 minute bio of who you are.
Yeah, well, thanks for having us on. Appreciative of that and everything that's going on in law enforcement and everything you guys do. So we're O2X. We're proud to serve first responder in the tactical community. We have a human performance education training company. So we do we deliver and implement programs into the tactical community to tackle occupational challenges like mental health, sleep issues, nutrition, injury, pain, building resilience of the force.
Tell me about your life and what has led you to this point early on after high school. We are glad to announce that Adam is an original New Jersey boy, which makes this just much more enjoyable for me.
I actually thought that was the only reason why we got invited. You know, it's like, you know, that was the Jersey connection there.
Yeah. Maybe subconsciously that was what happened there.
Yeah, absolutely. For one, loved growing up in New Jersey. I grew up in Essex County, a town called Nutley, New Jersey. Grew up there, went to U.S. Merchant Marine Academy. So I got my commission from as a ensign in the U.S. Navy. Definitely was my dream growing up, going into the military. And I wanted to be a Navy SEAL. Could not think of a better program group to go into than the SEAL teams. So very interesting time. I was there senior year. That's when September 11th happened. My application to SEAL training buds went in about a week after that. It's a long process, obviously. It takes like years to apply, get your physical scores, interviews, things like that, put the strongest package forward when you're applying. Then I was lucky enough to get picked up from an officer spot. So I went to SEAL training. I was on the East Coast. Then after SEAL training and advanced training and, dive supervisor school and SEER school and range supervisor and, officer training schools and stuff like that, advanced training, came to the East Coast and spent my time on the East Coast SEAL teams. I got out and, taking the uniform off, and I'm sure a lot of law enforcement feel the same way. It's like, hey, your world isn't done when you're done serving, right? So how do you continue to serve? How do you continue to give back when you take the uniform off? I actually think that that's a challenge for a lot of veterans. I was lucky that I have two incredible business partners, also both former SEALs. One, Paul McCullough, who I served with my entire career. And I came up here and went to Harvard Kennedy School for a year, wanted to create a company. And then here we landed at O2X 10 years later.
Are you familiar with the fact that we're having Rob O'Neill at our conference next year?
No.
Yeah. That's badass. April 23rd through the 28th in Nashville, Tennessee. Pumped to be having Rob O'Neill come to do one of our keynotes. We have a few different keynote speakers. We have Kyle Carpenter's coming. And we've got a couple extra. We're discussing our final choices today on who we're going to fork over the big cash to come and speak to the cops for an hour. Where did you come up with the name O2X?
So, what does it mean? Well, O2X is optimized to the X. So, you'd be familiar with it from the military standpoint. The X was always our target. That was our objective. Like, that was the enemy compound. That's what we were looking to get to. And it takes a lot of training and preparation to get to the X and get execute and then get home safely. And it takes a lot of training, preparation, mind, body, from everything from a tactical side, the skill-based stuff, but also from a human performance side. So our job now, optimized to the X, is to everybody to get to find their X, to successfully get there. And whether that's help them on mental health and sleep, or nutrition, pass PT tests, shooting tests, and things like that from a tactical standpoint, working with the mental performance side, and have a very successful long career and finish their careers as strong as they started. And that's our big mantra here. Remember what you felt like when you walked in. Yeah, when you were going to the training academy, like, there's no reason why you can't feel that way when you're leaving and then be able to enjoy that retirement. So that's the premise behind the name O2X.
What are the common questions you receive when somebody finds out you were a Navy SEAL?
Well, you know, I guess there's a lot of questions about training all the time. You know, like how hard was training? Did it mean, you know, was it as hard as it seemed? You know, what was life like in there? Like, what are the things you do, places you went? You know, and I usually tactfully block and bridge most of those questions and redirect them to something else. But, you know, the SEAL teams are an incredible place. I met, you know, so many incredible people I got to serve with, just awesome people that have done incredible things for the country and sacrificed a lot, you know, from them personally and their family. And, you know, they're not ones to talk about it, or they're just there, super humble, super quiet professionals, and just an awesome career, man. I absolutely live my dream out. Like, my dream growing up, from a kid from New Jersey, just like wanted to be a SEAL, didn't necessarily know the path to get there. Just thought that going to a military academy, I can get my commission, and that's the path to go. And I was lucky enough to do that. Had some great experiences, and obviously a very interesting time in our country, you know, post 9/11, coming right in there, and, you know, what the last 21 years have been for our country and for our service members, pretty incredible.
You feel like you were physically gifted and one of those freaks of nature, or did you really have to work to get where you went to be accepted into the BUDS program?
Well, definitely worked at it. It wasn't, to get into SEAL training, there's a physical component to it. There's a psychological component to it. But I think from a psychological component, it is the baseline is taking the SEAL PFT. It's like your SATs to get in to like what school is in. And you gotta annihilate that. You gotta absolutely annihilate that test. So passing the test of like what the minimums are or what that is, that's not difficult to do. But to get a very competitive score to make yourself stand out from all the other candidates, that is difficult. And some of those things did not come naturally to me. I didn't grow up with like pools. And obviously being in the SEAL team, like the first part of that acronym is C. So you need to actually, you know, be competent in the water. So working on my water skills, and to be quite frank, I was not good in the water. I didn't have much experience with it. Did not, you know, have open ocean swimming time. Didn't have type in like turbulent rough seas. Not much boating experience. I wasn't on any swim teams or anything like that. So during my college days, like I had to immerse myself in those environments. Played sports. I played baseball and rugby in college. I played sports growing up through high school. But it's something that I enjoyed training. I really enjoy that component of it. And to be able to really focus on what I wasn't good at, like the PT stuff, like I enjoyed rope climbing and dips and pull-ups and things like that, like the calisthenic kind of side of it, that kind of more like gymnastic side. I enjoyed that, but some of the other, the long duration effort, that was something I need to work on. Long distance rucking, soft sand work, wearing heavy loaded gear, you know, swimming long distances, open ocean, like that stuff is kind of unnatural for most people. But to immerse myself in those environments, that's, you know, I felt like I was the opposite of saying being gifted. I was passionate about what I wanted to do. I knew why I wanted to do it, and I just put my head down.
How did you get prepared for that endurance? Like, what were you doing? Let's just take the swimming side of it. How were you training to get better at swimming? Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, finding experts helps. And I feel like that there's a good synergy there on probably, you know, what you guys are doing. You know, you find experts in the field of people that are really good at shooting and tactical and CQB. And like, you find people who are like the best at it, and you put yourself close to those people. I would say that's what we do at O2X. We have all these 350 plus specialists that we synergize all that education and training and customize a program we work with. So finding the experts in these fields, the people that are super credibles. And I took that same tactic. That's the same tactic we use in the SEAL community. We find people who are the best at skydiving, jumping, diving, shooting. And then we were like, teach us. Let's be sponges and learn as much as we possibly can. So for me on the swimming side, Finding, you know, the right swim coaches. There was definitely like a lot of self-teaching, a component in there. But trying to get in with the swim and diving coaches, working on my turns, working on my swimming. Another guy, who's a former SEAL that like still works a lot of time, Stu Smith. I went down and trained with Stu Smith for a while, and he does a lot of like combat recovery because, you know, swimming is different. Like the combat recovery stroke is like the side stroke is like something that we have to take the test in. So that there's a level of proficiency and a lot of level of technique that you have to work in there. Took up diving, got my diving certification. Cause just because you're comfortable on top of the water doesn't mean you're going to be you'll be comfortable underneath the water. Worked on my breath holds, and took up surfing. And then I, you know, spent a lot of time in, you know, rough weather and really just trying to get competent at and really comfortable being in that environment. And it took a lot of time to just proficiently train yourself and, you know, kind of get to the speed that you needed in order to excel at that test. But then there's doing well in the test, and then there's doing well in BUDS. And that's two different things, two different training programs.
Were there moments in your training? And again, I'm not trying to breach the confidentiality of the sensitivity of, I understand I have a lot of friends in the military. I have friends that work intelligence in the military, and these guys won't utter a word. So I'm not trying to pry into that. Were there any moments where you were scared, or there were moments of like panic where you thought, oh shit, something along those lines? And then if there were those moments, what did you do to react and how'd you get through them?
I can tell you that there was, you know, along those lines of like going back into like the training is like, there was, I trained a lot with the Marine Corps group. They ran like crazy. You know, there was like gunnery sergeants and, you know, a lot of Marines and, you know, doing obstacle course stuff and things like that. So I felt like I immersed myself with like the PT studs and the people that were like just impressive in that regard. And that kind of ties into like getting out there. For one, I think in the SEAL community that you're not trying to like meet the standards. You're trying to like exceed the standards. Right. And when people put like a runtime or swims or, you know, just an evolution with log PT, you're not just trying to like make it through it. You're trying to excel during those things. Like you're trying to win evolutions. And I think when you're focused on winning, you're less focused on, you know, oh, this is brutal right now. And I think a big part too, in my opinion, you look at, if you take every evolution in every situation and just you're focusing on that specific moment, that kind of helps to like live in the moment a bit and to just focus on the task at hand. And it is a little bit like climbing a mountain. Like you got to focus on one hand and foothold at a time. And, you know, you can't get overwhelmed that, you know, I got days, weeks, months, years left of this. It doesn't necessarily get better or easier. It gets more challenging. So yeah, of course, there's times that they'll find your, you know, instructors are good. They'll find your weakness and they'll exploit it. And then it's up to you to kind of just get confident and get very comfortable. It's a very cliche term, but get comfortable being uncomfortable. That is definitely something that people get good at. And there's a ton of, you can't prepare for everything. I think it's just like in law enforcement, you cannot prepare for every single situation that is put at you. You can do a lot of training, but every scenario is different. Every environment's different. The atmospherics are different. People are different that you're working with, different experiences and different scenarios. You can't prepare yourself for everything. You just gotta, you know, be confident in your training. And, you know, that's what the teams are really good at preparing you for.
Just to push it a little bit further, was there ever a moment of fear? Can you recall a specific moment of fear of like, oh fuck, the current's fucking me up. Oh my God. Like, holy shit, we are really going to do this right now. Just one moment.
There's definitely times when you're encountering sea state at night, when you're swimming in with like all your gear, like heavy rocks. And I mean, you're barely buoyant, right? You're kind of neutral because you don't want to be like up and out of the water. So in heavy sea state at night, and you're looking back and you can see these huge breakers coming in at you, and you can, you know, it's hard to time that. You're working with the currents, and there's definitely some of those moments where like, they're pretty fearful because you got all this equipment on and you're like, hey, I gotta, I got to navigate through this and I haven't been here before, but it's the water is a huge equalizer there.
What is the thing that you say to yourself beyond being cognizant of your environment that gets you just to continue?
You know, the interesting part is we do everything as a team. You know, you're never alone. You're always with a swim buddy. You're always with your teammate. You got someone there to the left and right of you. And I think, you know, if I reflect my entire career, it's, you know, your confidence grows when you look at, like, you look left and right and you say, hey, I don't know what's going to happen when the ramp opens or you open the door to the, you know, the vehicle, or, you know, when you hit the beach from, you know, wading through the water. It's like, but the people on the left and right of me, I have like an immense amount of trust. And you talk about, you know, I know you guys talk about leadership and, you know, one thing is like building a team. We're building teams at O2X all the time. We're building our own internal team. We've all had leadership positions, and trust is the number one. That's the fabric of success right there. And to be able to trust each other, trust your teammates, trust your organization, your leaders, man, that's what builds your confidence.
How would you compare the training that you've received or the career that you had to now your professional life? And has it helped you prepare for the professional life? Because you're talking to somebody else who runs a business and it's challenging at times. So I'm curious how those experiences tied into what you're doing now.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I mean, you know, like anyone who's run a business, I'm like super empathetic about, like, now anytime I walk into a small business or a large business and a business that's been successful or a business that has a, you know, going out of business sale, you know, went bankrupt or whatever, I'm very empathetic to that because it is hard. It's a challenge. But leveraging the same tactics, you know, we are avid goal setters here, you know, making sure everyone is aligned. First and foremost, like in the military, we had commander's intent, right? We had the commander's intent, and every good organization should have a mission, a clearly defined mission, a vision for the company, and those guiding principles that, like, every decision is made. We're very big into decentralized leadership. Like, you can't be everywhere. You have to give the tools, you bring in the right people, which we have. And any success that we've had at O2X is 100% is because of people out in this other room here. And these people that are spread at our on-site specialists that are stationed at different departments full time, our specialists that work and help us training, like, they're the ones that are, you bring the right people and it all evolves around that. And I think the fundamentals of leadership, taking care of people, knowing that it's a business, but your business of people, you know, and you take care of your people, the organization, you know, eventually takes care of itself. You know, there's obviously a lot of hard work and challenging there, but I'm a big believer, obviously human capital is the most important thing. I think we saw firsthand, you know, we navigated COVID, you know, that during those 2 years, we work with a lot of federal groups, like a lot of different federal municipalities. So people weren't working. Well, they were working, obviously the frontline workers were, but they weren't bringing in people for education and training. They weren't bringing on-site specialists. You know, we could not meet with them in person. So the challenges behind that, you know, I saw the company step up big time. You know, extremely resilient. Everybody in here just talk about hunkering down, not even weathering through the storm, but thriving through a very chaotic and challenging environment. Now we can reflect back and maybe look at it. It was like, oh yeah, that wasn't that big of a deal. We navigated through it, but it's like, no, what a growth event. And I think there's trust built because that was our, you know, those were some storms that come and you hit different milestones as you continue to grow and build companies. And just to see the people take ownership, drive and execute at a high level is impressive. So I take all that stuff from I learned from the military. Honestly, it's kind of going long winded here, but I grew up with an incredible mother and father. You know, my mother was a second grade teacher, and you know, my dad was, he was a gym teacher for a bit and then was in sales, but soccer coach. And, you know, he was a, they were big on just development and teaching and saying, hey, you can do anything you want in life if you put your mind to it, like never holding anybody back, and just good human beings. And I feel like that element and some leaders I worked with in the military and through now the civilian world, it's just like that stuff is just taking that stuff and dishing it back out to the company.
How did you develop the, I got like three bangers in one. So how did you develop the mindset that you took with yourself into the military? When did that start to occur? And then the second part of this question is, how about you answer that one first, and then we'll come back to my second part of the question. So the question again is, how did you develop the mindset to know what it was going to take, the positive mindset, the winner's mindset? When and how did you develop that as a young man?
I think about it a lot because now I got like, I have an 18 month, you have four kids. I have one, I'm just starting right now. So it's, you know, I have an 18 month old little boy. And, you know, I think about, I try to reflect a lot right now on how can I be a good, as good a father to my son as my father was to me. Right. And, you know, how, what principles, I don't know what he was ever teaching. You know, he pretty much grew up without a father, you know, just from an accident at a young age. And, you know, it was powerful. You know, it was just really powerful on those things that he instilled by example. One thing was, I brought it up before, it was, there was never, ever a can't, or it was anytime I ever, you know, he would never let me quit anything. So those elements there is that if I committed to something, you committed to it. There was never a second option in that. You always put the team first. And I felt like that mindset was really, whether it was consciously or unconsciously, that was what the household was like growing up. It was like, get your discipline, get your homework done. You want to play sports? This, you know, school comes first. You got to do this. It was just, you know, it was probably a little bit of strict parenting, a lot of focus. And I grew up very competitive, playing sports. And I enjoyed that. I did enjoy training. But that didn't come like right away. I enjoyed that. I had to work. I felt like I definitely had to work pretty hard for, to get good grades. And I had to work pretty hard to be a good athlete, and it didn't come really natural. I would not call myself natural in any of these things. If I look back at like say shooting or jump or skydiving or diving, like I knew what I needed to do to be successful. And that was bred growing up. And that was bred through discipline. It takes time. It takes effort. It wasn't like, hey, you're going to breeze through homework and get an A on the test or not pay attention and not take note, like all those things. Whereas like it bred work ethic, and it bred, you got to put the time in to get the results you want.
I'm going to go back a little bit to you being at 18 months with your first child and get a little experience. And I want to maybe pass on some things that may help you be a good dad. A lot of people are nervous about being a father for the first time. And am I doing things right? And I collect a lot of data nonstop. I'm constantly training, consuming information. Some of that stuff tends to be at times just trickles across my plate. How to be a good parent, how to parent correctly. And not everything I hear is something that I'm going to keep, but some nuggets I find, I go, I'll take that and put that a little in my pocket. I'll hold on to that one. So literally yesterday, I think the game is, if you ask yourself, are you being the best parent you can be? If you look at your daily behaviors, your yearly behaviors, whatever it may be, your monthly, weekly behaviors, there has to be obviously a balance between being productive, being successful, but also, am I being the best dad I can be? What that means is, are you doing things that are more for them or for yourself? So for me, that's how I see it, man. And a lot of people will out of nowhere compliment me and say, you're the best dad. And I really live for those remarks. I get a lot of accolades. We're making significant change in law enforcement. We've saved a fuck ton of lives. You know, people's careers have exploded because of the training they've received. That's all great and dandy. But whenever time I hear somebody say, we see you, we know what kind of father you are, and other kids will say things like, you're the best, like you're everybody's favorite dad. There are many times in life that you're going to be able to make decisions on what you're going to do. And sometimes those decisions, when you really reverse engineer and being a good father, they become very simple. And it had happened yesterday. There were some requests where I was like, whatever. If this is what makes them happy, sure, we'll do this. You know, is it the best thing for like as an adult to call? No, but they're kids and they want to do this and I'm down with it. So it's not about me. And on the other side of it, I also am taking care of myself very well. So there is me time as well. Meditation, working out, development, being in my business. So there's this saying, and I don't want to say that I created it. It's called being selfish to be selfless. So making sure that you're the best version of you first to then be the best version for them. Yeah, and dude, everything is about them. You know what I mean? I hate to watch parents not be that way. I see it, brother. Once you start having kids, all you're in now is families, it's disheartening at times to watch parents be selfish in the sense of, I don't know what they haven't resolved in their life, but you know, I think I've had some good examples of, and I wish I could say it was from my own parents, but it wasn't. I was not fortunate, but I always think about, well, I like who I am now, so I probably would have changed anything that I experienced. I'm not saying my parents were the worst people in the world. I'm saying I wasn't fortunate to have parents that you could regard like you do. But I did have people that I watched in my life that I said, this guy really does take time out of his day and spends it with all these kids. My uncle, who, God rest his soul, passed away suddenly, was the only adult who never... Personally, I think he was a 12-year-old on the inside to begin with. I don't think he had a mature bone in his body. He was so much goddamn fun. But if you look at any family pictures, there's 38 kids in the pool and him. It's because he was a kid and he just enjoyed it so much. And dude, when you can shift away from yourself to them, man, there's so much enjoyment in being a parent. It's enjoyable, dude. You know, and it's not a facade. I don't put it on Instagram and Facebook because I want you to think I'm good. I do it maybe as an example to show you how to be good.
I was always blown away. To me, the best operators that I saw in the SEAL teams were the guys with families. You would think it was the opposite. You know, you would think it was the guys without families, single guys that can go to work early and stay late and spend out like extra hours on the range and put the extra time in the gym. And it was the best operators and the best experience. And not to mention from a leadership position is like, whether I had a family or not, I had to understand what it was like to at least have a family. Like I'm not waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning and changing diapers clearly as the single guy that maybe was in a leadership position, but to be able to look around and being like, how you're doing, how you're executing, you're maybe efficient with time. You're a good husband, you're a good father, you know, you maximize that time because you're training all the time and then you're deploying. And for the, post 9/11 father, military SEAL father was that they were gone most of the time. And so they're always playing catch up. And really when you come back from deployment, it's a lot of things that we talk about now with some of our federal groups is that when you come back from deployment, like things have changed. And like, maybe in like, you got to be okay with that. Like, mom is, holding down the fort, like big time. Like she's the one that's like the example of what to follow. Now your kids look at you and they say, your dad's sacrificing a lot. Mom's sacrificing a lot. You know, they know that there's a professionalism of, when I look at, your kids look at you, you have your own business. You're professional, you take care of it. And I think there's a lot to be said from, just observing them you working hard, right? And I think that there's a level of sacrifice, there's a level of volunteerism that's there. And there's a level of like learning what it is to be a good teammate. And as we've know that, in relationships, you got to be a good teammate. In leadership, you got to be a good team, whether you're in a leadership position or not. Followership and being a good teammate is not something that everybody gets. And just because you played a sport one time, because being a good teammate is hard. It's thinking like what you just said. It's thinking about other people versus yourself. And that to me is powerful. That's what makes good leaders.
You know, I'm going to give you two things. And again, this is not my interview, but I want to pass this along to a lot of people because it sparks some things in my mind. My children watch me work. I have a gym in my basement. I'm fortunate enough to have that. And then it kind of mixes the two. So it's wonderful that I get to kind of do my thing and have them there. And when you talk about them observing, my kids like to work out. They're little. They're very little. But dude, that's part of the thing. And by the way, they hold me accountable because I work out twice a day. So if I'm not working out the second time, they're like, yo, you working out tonight? And I'm like, yeah. Like, yeah, like, what are we doing? We going to go downstairs? Like, what are we doing? Like, this is real. I have little people literally who are my accountability coaches of, you haven't worked out yet. You know, did you work out yet this evening? Because we got to go. I got to work. I have my number two son comes down last week and he's like, hey, I got to go work out. Is that cool? He's like, can you put the radio on for me? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, yeah, I have things to do. And he's in the basement. Like, you know, he doesn't know what he's doing, but he's like in his mind. So, you know, I'm not creating robots. To me, it's like, they're not watching their dad drink beer and act like an asshole. Yeah. Right? They're watching their father. And a lot of people watch, you know, people don't realize how disengaged they are from their families when they're watching football or baseball and it's okay to have escapism. That's something you love. It's great. But acknowledge that you can't pretend like that's the time you're spending with your kids, because if you're not spending time with your kids, then you're not spending time with your kids. But there's also this simple thing that I heard on maybe a TED talk. Everybody wants to know what the answers are to be a good parent. And at a very base core, a very simple principle is just being there with them. Everything else you don't got to figure out. It'll just come naturally. But being in the moment, acknowledging your kids, putting the phone down, spending one-on-one time with them, sitting with them, watching their shows, you know, to me, I'm super comfortable in knowing that I'm doing a good job. And all I'm doing is collecting data from all these other people saying, hey, it's going to go fast. I wish I did this. I wish I spent more time with them. So I'm just collecting the outside environmental data of, these are the regrets people I know had with their kids when they were this little. I don't want to sound like that in 15 years. So, and then one thing I hear all the time, if you look at the Steve Jobs letter while he was dying, his manifesto or whatever it may have been, I don't know if manifesto is the right word, but in the end, the only thing that mattered was my family and to spend more time. And it's all you hear over and over again. I just thought about my kids. You'll hear the interviews that I do with the guys and girls who were significantly injured in the line of duty who say, all I could think about was my kids. And now that I had a second chance to spend a lot more time with them, and those are the priorities in my life. I think about that all the time, dude.
All time. And then you think from like a resilience building standpoint, some of the, you know, the workshop drills that we've done was, you know, you kind of write your eulogy, right? You're putting your eulogy down and be like, well, are you living that life? Like, how do you want to be remembered? And like, what is your legacy? I used to think that when people say, what's your legacy? And you'd be like, man, what do I care about my legacy? You know, like, it sounds like a very ego-driven thing to think about. But what it is, it's kind of like how you're living your life, you know? And you're like, hey, you want to be remembered for all these things, or, you know, you want to say, hey, this person was a good father, good, you know, good leader, you know, took care of the community, all these different things. And I think that we kind of get wrapped up. Life is busy. Life gets challenging and hard. And I think we know, you guys know intimately, you know, how, you know, challenging the tactical world and living in that world is. That's a challenging job. And building resilience takes self-confidence, it takes courage. And it also, you have to constantly be reminded of, like, you know, your purpose, and then also what like the end state here is. And, you know, sometimes, you know, people aren't driven by being like, you know, the best law enforcement officer, best tactical athlete, best SEAL, but like, you can probably, sometimes you have to dip into different motivations. And you guys know that from training. You dip into motivation, you could be, you know, hey, be around as long as you possibly can to be there for your spouse, your partner, your kids, to be a grandfather, right? So if that motivates you to lose weight and be better at your job and be more successful, or decrease your stress so you don't have a cardiac event on like your foot, you know, when you have to, like, you know, you got a foot chase and then you haven't been on one in like 10 years, right? And like, so we understand that these things happen, to be able to navigate, to be able to thrive through life, whatever that motivation is, and get to what is actually your purpose, your why. And then, you know, hopefully the byproduct of that is taking care of yourself a little bit better.
Before we get off this topic, I watched a YouTube video, and I don't know why I get on these rips and tears and these deep holes of YouTube videos, but I was on one about the afterlife and people's experiences with life beyond your life on earth. And one guy said when he met Jesus, he asked him, "What have you done for your fellow man? Did you leave the world a better place than you found it?" So it doesn't have to be a lot. It just means, what are you doing for others to be selfless? And what this guy ended up doing was going back and becoming a liaison to speak to people who were terminally ill, to comfort them about that there was life after death. And that's what he said was God's command to him. He was sent back for an opportunity to prove himself to the Lord. And again, I'm not, believe me, I'm not sitting here saying that this is some holy roller shit. But you have to have, that was probably one of the most impactful things I've ever heard in my life. And I say that to myself all the time. What am I doing for everybody else? Am I doing enough? And I'm proud of the work that we are doing here, saying lives have been preserved. Families have been kept together. Bad people who are preying on society are now where they belong. And the world is a better place. And I can feel comfortable knowing that if that's the question I'm asked, even as of today, I can say, this is what I've done. And I'm proud of that. Here's my next question for you. What are you doing to train mentally and physically now after completing your military career?
Yeah, well, I'm lucky that I do this training in part. I kind of live the brand in order to be able to stand in front of different groups and talk to them about how to better take care of yourself and how to perform. It's about sustainability and longevity performance. I kind of, like you mentioned, there's like three sides. Well, the way I look at it, there's three sides to this triangle. There's your professional life, you know, there's your personal life, and there's you, right? So you got to take care of all three sides of that triangle. And it's hard to take care of more than two sides of that triangle at a time, right? So when I look about the resilient side, you know, of the fact that is, for one, sleep, nutrition, conditioning, resilience, managing stress, like those five pillars. I mean, we break them down into a very catchy thing, and was like our Eat, Sweat, Thrive model at O2X. And it helps me remember and check in every single day. Now, these workshops that are going on, I'm lucky that I have a job that I can go and I'm talking to the world's leading, you know, resilience expert or sleep expert or nutrition expert. And I'm able to sit down, I'm listening, because I'm learning even more when we're doing training. You know, and we know that, like, when we're putting training together, we're putting curriculum together. When you have to teach something, you learn it even more than when you're trying to absorb it for yourself. So keeping things simple doesn't mean easy. And I think that's a big thing too, is that, you know, I like to have fun with this stuff. I think previously to this, and the way I looked at it when I was in the military, I was very focused on, for one, I need to do these things to be good at my job, but to be able to go overseas and bring everybody home safe, deployment after deployment, mission after mission, right? That was like my motivation to kind of do those things. You know, now it's, you know, and sometimes like in that training methodology and thought process, it feels like an extension of work, right? And for the tactical community, it does. Like, hey, I got to be good at this because I need to be successful at my job and be able to be the best leader and person I can be, right, for the job. And I think that some people are more, my motivation now is like, clearly, like I developed some, you know, good habits and good routines behind that. Waking up early and training is like something I enjoy doing. It like gets my mind ready for the day. Like, I enjoy being up early. I enjoy my mornings. I have my routine. You know, I love getting a jump start on, you know, phone calls or emails or text message things that come in. I feel like I'm productive. I feel like I get that, you know, I spend a lot of time on the road training. So to make sure that I think through those things and to be, have the baseline education, to have the baseline skills is really important, because I guess what it comes down to is that what we're trying to preach at O2X, and you know, I'm thinking about it myself, is to have self-awareness on all these topics, to be like, if you're not performing at the highest level, or if you're feeling your energy's low, or you know, you're kind of not dialed in mentally, you're not in that like that optimal performance curve, that you're able to get yourself back there. And you can either self-diagnose or self, you know, self-assess, to go through your mental checklist of like from head to toe, inside and out, like, why am I feeling this way? And to be able to self-correct. It is no different than when you're shooting and you're a right-handed shooter and you throw a shot low and left. Like, what does that mean? You know, well, I need it. Maybe I jerk the trigger, you know, so maybe like, let's correct and let's correct fast, so my next shot can be exactly where it is.
Tell me about the workshops. And earlier you said you had 350 specialists. So let's deep dive now into what O2X is, where you guys are at, and where people can find you. So let's go through the whole fucking rigmarole.
Yeah. All right. Well, there's three parts to it. For one, having a program is really important, a human performance program. I like coming in and doing education and training workshops, but like, you have to have some sort of model. If you can only imagine, if you had 350 specialists of these different topics and they just came in and it was like the Tim Ferriss of like, okay, everyone's throwing all these different things, it could be very confusing. And it takes the operator or the law enforcement or the firefighter, it takes that person to like pack it all in their brain and make sense of it. To be able to have a very customized curriculum for the individuals that you're, the groups that in the specific groups that you're working with, it's very important. So when you have all these specialists, you hone that curriculum down that we call our Eat, Sweat, Thrive model, that we bring into and customize it and make it work for the schedule of the group and the unit that we're working with. Because you can't just say, hey, listen, you need to take 3, 4, 5 days off of training. You need to implement this every week. And you know, from the law enforcement community, you know, people are working every single day. Like, how do you fit this training in, right? You have to take into account how to best implement it. And I feel like that's been, you know, that has been the exciting part on our side. So taking a curriculum, develop an education and training program for based on what they need. You know, the occupational challenges, right? There's sleep disruption because of shift work. There's mental health, suicide, there's daily stress, things that are acute, but the things that develop in the chronic side. There's injuries, there's pain, there's, you know, weight control issues, you know, type 2 diabetics, like you guys know them all, right? So how can we take those occupational challenges and implement a curriculum into a training, into a unit? And then also when we implement those training programs, because it's not going to be overbearing and they have a day job, what happens when we leave? And when we leave there, what happens is for some departments, we kind of tell them is like to have a on-site specialist, to have a strength coach, a nutritionist, a clinical psychologist, resilience specialist, a injury prevention, athletic trainer, physical therapist, to have somebody full-time at your department that brings this curriculum there when we're not there doing these workshops. And to be expeditionary with it. So meaning that it doesn't matter where people are. I'm not saying they meet them at the street corner. You know, I'm just saying wherever they are, if they're in the field, like get in the field, take the slack out of the trigger to implement the training program and to meet the operators, the tactical athletes where they are with a methodology that it makes sense and it's simple. And then lastly, I would say it goes along the sustainment part, is that you have to have assessments. You have to have ways to check up from the neck up, and then all around, head to toe, inside and out, to be preventative in nature versus curative. And then also have some sort of technological means, right? So we have software that enables our on-site specialists in order to talk to more people, to prescribe a customized strength and conditioning plan, nutrition, reach back support for every single person that's in the field. So that's kind of how we do it between our on-site specialists, our education and training, and our technology and reporting. And then that what we call is the O2X program.
So give me an example of one of the projects you guys are doing, so people really have a context of the practical application. So whatever you want, it's like, we're working with the Dallas SWAT team. Here's what we did for them.
We'll take a couple different examples. One, let's take Fletsy. You know, so we have a full-time on-site specialist down there with the U.S. Marshals and their training academy. So I think from a law enforcement standpoint,
What are they doing for them?
So prep work before they even show up.
What does that mean?
Like, hey, training and education programs, like, hey guys, think about showing up as physically fit as you possibly can and make sure you have a science and evidence backed program that's going to help you be successful when you get here. Let's get the standard a little bit higher. Let's make sure, because people are, yeah, they might've passed the PT test to get there and, you know, done things on their own, but let's have a someone who is a strength and conditioning coach, someone who is also understands movement and injury prevention, to develop a program or a methodology for the training course where people can easily do it on their own and show up at a higher standard, right? Then along the way of the training program, let's just say it's, you know, anywhere from, you know, 3 to 6 months on different training groups that we work with, to be able to have a specific training program that integrates with the tactical training, right? And then that's like maybe running PT each day. But I don't want the takeaway from this conversation to be that this is all just strength and conditioning and fitness. I think that what I try to do the most is talk about everything but that, because people get that human performance program has physical training in it, right? So let's talk about the nutrition side. Let's talk about energy management. Let's talk about fuel recovery. Let's talk about how those things tie into cognitive ability, short and long-term memory, things that are very important, let's just say in law enforcement or any job that's in the tactical community. Let's talk about how injuries occur, wear and tear, what the different environments, wearing heavy loaded gear, training in gear, being asymmetric positions, different tactical environments and where those things come. And then also give them tools and skills to be able to manage stress. So that person is just kind of working. And that person is not going to be an expert in every modality. They're not a clinical psychologist and a registered dietitian and a physical doctor of physical therapy, but they have the leverage of those specialists that are not there, that are a part of the O2X team, to kind of reach back and help them. So what we're trying to do is, hey, let's give you guys the baseline skills and training. So to take with you in the field, at least, you know, right from wrong, you have some resources that are from experts, like you guys do when you guys are out training. And, you know, when they are finished, they at least have a pretty good baseline and they're starting their careers really strong.
So the results have been positive.
Very positive. Yeah. Well, it's usually like, where has this been type of thing? You know, like, why hasn't this done? The old timers are like, why? I wish I had this. You know, we always say, hey, the best time to plant a tree was, you know, 25 years ago, but the second best time is now. Right. So it's like, let's get in it. You know, people are scared a little bit. You've probably seen this a lot. I'm talking a lot about law enforcement right now, but we do a lot of work in fire and different like DOD groups and things like that. But people are scared at the end of their careers, because it's pretty common when people finish and retire and they die from a cardiac event like a year after they finish and retire from their careers. It happens all the time.
Yeah, dude, we see it.
Yeah, it's alarming. So I think people are a little scared about it sometimes, like, you know, and guys like, oh, I wish I had this. But yeah, the people training, right? I know when we started getting these specialists through, like, in different times in the military, it was a relief. It was like, okay, now I don't have to try to be the expert in everything. Just tell me what I need to do. Tell me the why. I think that's really important. Tell me the why. I want to understand. So when I'm on my own, I can effectively, you know, do training and take care of myself. You got to develop those skills. However, it's nice to have those experts there.
Yeah, that's for sure, dude.
Academy standpoint, because that that just ties to law enforcement. Now, there's other groups. We work with some, you know, some bomb tech groups and things like that. And, you know, they're more like, you know, hey, like, how do I take care of myself, like mid-career, late career? We have an on-site specialist with that group. We have physical therapists working on injury prevention periodically through the year. You know, we've implemented like weekly yoga sessions with them. We do 3-day baseline. We gave every individual in that unit 3 days of like our Eat, Sweat, Thrive curriculum. So they've heard from like 10 different O2X specialists. So they have a pretty good baseline. At least we're talking off the same page. If I use like the CQB example, I'm like, at least all of our calls are the same and we're calling things the right thing. So it just puts us on the same playing field.
Where can people find your programs?
Yeah, you can find the programs. Well, for one, you can learn all about it at our website. We try to keep that up to date. It's in O2X, like optimize to the O2X.com. They can hear about from our onsite specialists. We got a podcast as well. We have a quarterly magazine called The Armory that has like all these different articles from all these specialists and input from the field, just like different insightful things. Being even like National Police Week, you know, we've had, you know, three of our specialists being talking about mental health and law enforcement. That was on our blog. All that stuff's on our website and social media groups. And then, you know, they can download the app if they wanted. You know, usually our app is something that we, you know, our software is used with our on-site specialists that are like co-located with like different units because they can directly talk back and forth with the on-site specialist, even if you're in the field. So there's that connectivity. But I guess if you wanted to, people can go on there and download that. And there's a ton of programs.
Said something before, and you know, it's a real reality that police academies, training institutions run by the government, although there is some value, it is very clear that in order to resolve a lot of the issues that we're facing, you're going to have to go and find these contractors like you and I out there. This is not a pitch. This is proof in the pudding. I mean, we have real results to the things that we offer. And actually, it's a lot more time, money, energy, and effort saved than what can be offered by somebody who is trying to create a program or run a program that really doesn't know what to do with the program to make it better. So there are people out there, and people have to understand that we have the solutions to a lot of the problems and adversities we face in society, this profession, and other professions as well. So that's a major thing that I want to advocate is, you know, you've got all these great people who have a lot to offer, who are willing to offer what they have to you, but your job is to seek out to try to find this stuff to make your life better because life is precious. And I got to tell you, I like living life the way that I live it. And I mean that in every sense of the word, but namely feeling well overall and continuing to polish my craft and make the world a better place. I have one last question for you. And this is a little selfish of me. Go ahead. What are you going to say? Go.
I do agree. Well, I 100% agree with you on that. And it's not every time when we go out and we have 20 meetings a week with different groups. And usually that person that who's in charge of like, say, health, wellness, and safety, whatever, you know, anything that's in, they're like, thank God that you're here. Because they're overwhelmed by the task at hand. They're just like, thank God, we need, for one, this is all we do at O2X. Like we do human performance, health, wellness, resilience education. That's like our whole focus. That's our whole existence of the world. And I think all these different units have to be good at everything, but you'd be like the jack of all trades, the master of none. Let it somebody that's the master, the people that have do this for a living come in. And also not just say, just push whatever organic assets that you have away saying, hey, I know you're an officer in charge of the PT at the academy. No, I'm not. I want to work with you. I don't want to work against you. Like this is a collaborative thing. Like there's a lot to tackle here. Like no one has solved the mental health issue. Well, what are we doing with that? Online training does not, 8 hours of online training does not solve the mental health problems in the law enforcement community. I'll tell you that. Right? Like roll our sleeves up and get dirty. And it needs to become in like resilience building programs, things that require significant interventions, require resources. And I've talked with a lot of like big city fire commissioners, or I'm sorry, police commissioners and fire commissioners, but directors of public safety. And if the answer is, because what comes up, I'm hearing a lot, is resources. Resources, well, we don't have money to do this. Well, the quote was from every mid to large size department, if they want to invest in health and wellness programs and taking care of their people, they can. They have the juice to do it.
Oh, yeah.
It requires leadership. It might require some, you know, is it we're going to require like MMA, you're going to compare those things to like tactical training. I get you need the tactical training, right? But you can find those assets and resources there. But you can't, if this was your family, think about this. You just described your four kids. If your family had the same issues that the law enforcement community has, mental health challenges, overstressed, obesity, pain and injury, what would you be doing? Cancer? What would you be doing? You would do everything you can to get the best advice, input, care for your family. So why wouldn't you do that for your officers? Why wouldn't you? Right? That has to be a priority because it's a hard, challenging job. And to finish your 30-year career, 20-plus year career in a job and the dynamics that happened always, but it requires a unique intervention. It requires progressive thinking. It requires good leadership to get it done. And so I just wanted to, you know, to kind of talk to you, you know, mention because you brought it up. And I thought that's, you know, you're 100% spot on with your assessment there. It, you know, it requires, like I said, I'm not saying, you know, O2X is the only game in town. I'm just saying, you know, this is what we do for a living and we take a lot of pride in it. And if you don't like it, you can tell us down to like, you know, the most minutiae detail. And we're going to make the changes to make us being big thing for us. Our mantra is getting 1% better every day. So we're not looking for those big sweeping changes. We're not imparting, telling every officer they need to start eating, you know, going from, you know, changing their whole life, upending it. We're looking for small incremental changes that are going to make a big difference. And you nailed it before. How are you going to perform at high levels if you feel like crap all the time? How are you possibly going to do that? Not only at work, but how are you going to do that at home? How are you going to be there for your family? How are you going to be there for your kids? It's not possible.
Here's one little thing I give advice to people. Stop drinking soda. How simple is that one, right? Just drink water. Make water your only drink.
There's a little bit of sugar in soda.
I mean, like people don't realize how sick soda is making them. And I have literally given that advice and not many people have listened because there's a lack of discipline. There's a lack of self-control. And it's not that difficult to say, I'm not going to drink soda. I'll take a water with lemon, please. But I've seen people lose 10 pounds in 2 months just stopping drinking soda. And yet, you know, everybody comes calling and has regrets right about this time of year in New Jersey as we embark upon our first 95 degree day, a weekend coming up, and we're going to don bathing suits.
That's a motivator.
Fuck yeah, it is. I mean, I'm constantly seeing myself without a shirt on at a place where I'm going to have to. And brother, I'm not exactly ideal of what I want myself to look like because I'm holding myself against me. I'm not worried about what you look like or he looks like or she looks like. I'm worrying about what my vision is of myself. So I know where I'm at. I'm happy with my progress, but I'm not a celebratory person until I've actually won. And I'm not even close to winning yet. Now, we talked about these city leaders and these directors. That is actually one of the most significant issues that we face, especially in public safety and public relations and public entities. But the cool thing about that, which gives people hope, is that if leaders, we just convince leaders to understand that they can learn to lead, we could have significant change. And you've got to dig into your heart if you are a leader and say, I can learn to change. I can learn to lead. I want to be regarded as a better leader. And when we have better leaders, we'll have better things. And we have better things, the world will be a better place. You can go on YouTube and learn a lot about leadership just today alone. Literally put in leadership and watch and consume 3 or 4 videos. And I'd have a funny feeling you'd be making different decisions even at the end of that training. So you don't need to go to a summit or an event or a conference on how to lead. YouTube is probably one of the most powerful things for human development that I've ever seen in my life. It's amazing. And there's a lot of gold in there if you want to, or you can continue to be a fucking asshole. Right. And like, I don't know what else to say is like, if you're a leader who's not trying to learn how to lead better, you're a fucking asshole. Like you've got to, I get it. You're like, oh, I love the compassion. I love the empathy, but there's a lot of dynamic to leadership besides compassion, empathy. By the way, my hat's off to you. You've got half of it figured out, but they're looking to you and yeah. Don't kid yourself. People know when you're a shitty leader.
Yeah, 100%. And not to think that leadership is easy for anybody. And it's a constant learning process.
Constant.
And the thing is, like, the followership, the team, being a good teammate, like, that's hard too. And it doesn't stop because you're the leader, right? Because you still got to be a good teammate when you're the most senior person that's there. So, I mean, it never becomes more evident. So we do a lot of work with the surface Navy, right? So ships, small ships, big ships. Well, guess what? When you're on a floating city, you know, with like 300 people or 150 people or 500 people or thousands of people, everyone, you never see what one person can do in a leadership position. It either makes or breaks everything, the experience, the culture, because guess what? You never leave your boss. You never leave. And that culture filters down. And, right. And so talking about the behaviors that we want to see and we want to see changed, it was like, reward the behaviors that, you know, that you want to see involved with your group. Like, get excited for people, you know, PT during the middle of the day, or like, whether you like to do it or not, engage with each other, talk about, you know, there's such an example of leadership, but you never see more direct impact of leadership, like on a ship where someone, hey, you don't have to be the fittest person, but that senior leader, just knowing that they need to go out and train every day. Well, that says something, you know, prioritizing, you know, when you can, prioritizing sleep and be like, hey, sleep's job preparedness, fellas, you know, and ladies, like, that's preparedness. That's going to make me sharp and be able to make my best decisions I possibly can, right? What are we doing? Talking about being good family, you know, good family people, right? And taking care of each other, right? Asking people how it's more than just a job, like people working 30 years, you know, you don't know anything about their kids or their families, you know? And like, that stuff is leadership, you know. I Merchant Marine Academy, I had a superintendent there. It was a former two-star in the Marine Corps, Joseph Stewart. He could sit down with 900 midshipmen and say, hey, how's your father doing? Oh yeah. And he just would chat up. You never knew. You stand on the sidelines of the game talking to somebody, you know, and it's like somebody's parent. That guy's not in uniform. He's the head of the whole school. He's a two-star. Just kind of, you know, you think his kid's playing out in the field. Just great leadership, ground level leadership. And it's like, the foundation is like, you put your people first, you know, you lead from the front, you lead by example, you know, it's more than just, this is more than just a job. The tactical community is a life. Mm-hmm. And there's more to it than that. So I echo your sentiments there about good leadership.
Earlier, this is the last thing I have, because then we have to stop. You had mentioned Tim Ferriss, which piqued my interest as a thriving entrepreneur and obsessive maniac in business and production and growth. What other things are you listening to outside of this realm for your own self-development or reading? And I'm curious because I want to see how much we match up. Tell me about your favorite stuff to ingest for mental growth.
Yeah. Well, one of them, and it's like a big initiative of mine. So my wife is from Costa Rica and speaks Spanish fluently. So I'm always like, in my spare time, I am trying to learn another language. So I'm trying to get better at Spanish. So that's something that I do. It's tied to my own professional development, because I think it's very challenging at 42 years old to like really immersing myself and learning a language. My son speaks more Spanish than English at home. My wife talks, so that's very important for me to get. So I do spend a lot of time on that. When I work out in the morning, there's a ton of book. You mentioned YouTube. So there's a ton of book reviews. Sometimes I don't have all this time to like read full books. So I spend a lot of time, like, you know, I know what the top books are, you know, I'm listening to things about, with Adam Grant. I'm listening to, you know, those top performance books that are out there. I love the book, Legacy, you know, by the New Zealand All Blacks. James Kerr wrote that. So really just kind of getting as much, ingest as much as I can. And like, I'm also like super lucky from like the human performance standpoint, is that, you know, I'm following all of our specialists on what they do at national labs, what they do in the Department of Defense, what they do with the different tactical groups and like where they are. So, I mean, they're constantly pushing papers, research, and they are at the leading edge. So it's hard. Like my biggest challenge is like, how much time in the day can I have for my own professional development and be a, you know, try to be a SME in the business that we're doing. So, it's kind of like a little bit of a shotgun blast all over with it, with different things.
Well, dude, I'm happy to see you doing your thing. The world needs it. I think you're doing a great thing. And hopefully this is to a long time friendship. And we are a business that always tries to align ourselves with those who like to act, behave, and want to constantly grow together. Because when you understand there's plenty in the world to go around, you don't have to act like a little bitch. And we run into people who act like little bitches all the time because they feel threatened. But we don't. And we have a lot of wonderful relationships, a lot of organizations, and who you may, from an outside in, say, well, that's their competitor. Why are they so friendly? Because there's plenty. And if there's anything we could do for you, and I think I'm seeing you again in a couple of weeks when I'm coming on your podcast, and you get to ask me fucking questions. So it'll be my time, even though your teeth are fucking perfect, right? Got phenomenal teeth, dude.
Hey, the rising tide lifts all boats, right? So I do appreciate what you guys do. And I love, we love learning and collaborating in partnership. So especially when it's another Jersey group, we'll take it any day.
Yeah, dude, we're going to fucking have to hit the shore at least once together. I don't know if you're into that, but oh, I am.
I'm in. Count me in.
All right, brother. It's a pleasure, and I will see you soon.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks, Adam.